And welcome back to episode 145 of the Weekly Tech Rant with me, Jay.
And me, Carl.
Oh, we are back after a long week of tech updates, the Apple releases. I'm full of cold, so I apologize now if I sneeze on air. I've got the first cold of the season, you know. So, as you say, kids are back at school. I think we were talking about before, weren't we?
And, yeah.
Also, I was at Oktoberfest last week for work, of course.
It's a hard life.
It is hard life. Yes, and it's probably thousands of people with all kinds of diseases spreading, coughing, spluttering. But that being said, we're back for our usual roundup of the latest tech stories, cybersecurity news, and the TechRant rumor mill. And it has been a week since the official launch of the new iPhone 15 and Watch Series 9 and Ultra Gen 2. They've also been available to buy since last Friday. So we will come back later, probably next week. I think we might have a roundup on some of the early reviews and feedback, because there's been a few stories, hasn't there, around the durability of the glass,
the
coating. Yeah. It's all a bit weird, that being said. But this week, we're going to talk our usual tech story. So actually, let's jump straight into the first story of the weekend, which is one that actually we were going to talk about a few weeks ago, but we got sidetracked, didn't we? Which was around, apparently, a cyber attack or a breach that happened back in August of 21 to do with the UK and its electoral data, wasn't it? Voter data.
It was, No, apparently the attack began, or hack began in August 2021, but it wasn't discovered until October 2022. And this is for the UK Electoral Commission. But so they discovered this in 2022, but they didn't tell anyone until last month. And their words, so it could stop the attack and assess the extent of the incident, as well as harden its systems and get in touch with National Cybersecurity Centre, UK Information Commissioner, etc. Apparently, they've hacked the system to gain access to servers containing copies of voter registration data, the Commission's own email system, and its control systems. Doesn't sound great to me.
No, their argument, wasn't it, was that a lot of this data is already in the public domain. As you say, so, you know, nothing, you know, that they, but the other issue was, you say, you know, the fact that they've got access to the Commission's personal data, i.e. not voter data, you know, the business data, isn't it, as well?
But yeah, also the voter data, because when you register to vote in this country, we have something called an electoral roll. It's basically, it's a public board of everyone that's able to vote, but you can choose to not have your information on that public
same here
role.
Yep, I'm on that.
I do every time, but obviously they got access to that data as well. So the when they say the data is already in the public domain, that only meant for people that have chosen to show their information.
And that's a valid point, isn't it? You know, the fact the worry here is, you know, why didn't they say anything? But I suppose what we've got here is a government body. They said they were already in touch with the National Cybersecurity Centre and the ICO, the Information Commissioner's Office here in the UK. So, you know, from a due diligence perspective, this wasn't about a public notification because the relevant authorities were already aware of it. So from that perspective, they did what they needed to do. And I guess, you know, given the level of the data here, they needed to assess it really, isn't it? But it is worrying because, you know, once you've got that voter data, you know, identity theft and fraud is really easy. You know, we see a lot of that in this country and others. You know, what else could be doing with it? You could take it, you can match it to other data sets that you've got, you know, for other reasoning, for, I guess, not just impersonation, but for compiling data on people if you're looking for specific individuals. And, you know, according to the commission board themselves, isn't it, the CEO, is it Sean McNally? The CEO Sean McNally, I couldn't read my own words then. His words was that they reckon it was a very sophisticated attack, wasn't it?
And didn't delete it. Always. I mean, everyone says that, along with, we value your security.
I'm just going to say, that was my point. They always say this. I mean, well, if they're that sophisticated, surely we need to reevaluate your defences here, isn't it?
Well, and then the problem is, they even said themselves, they don't actually know for sure what files were accessed.
No.
So at this point, what, we're talking nearly 2 years later now, still not entirely sure what they got.
So, exactly. And there's no way of knowing whether your data has been used here, really, isn't it? Because they say there's nothing you can do. There's no immediate action required. But if you think you've been, affected by this, it says you should look out for your information being used without permission. Well, I mean, given the state... I was just going to say, given the state of breaches in this country and the amount of institutions that have been breached, not necessarily a public one, you know, there's a high percentage that, you know, you could be a victim of identity theft or fraud, not via this, but via another means. So it's very difficult to really ascertain whether or not you've been a victim, isn't it?
It is. And yeah, I mean, I shouldn't expect so much from a government entity, to be honest. I should learn my lesson here that it's always the same thing. They don't tell us for ages, and they had no idea what's actually going on and can't really tell us much information other than we were hacked. It's just kind of the same story every time.
It is. It's just rinse and repeat, isn't it? But exchange the organisation or company for it.
Yep.
Oh, God. Well, there we go, folks. If you live in the UK and you were registered to vote between, was it 2014 and 2022, there is a good chance your data may have been illegally accessed and may have been stolen, but we cannot confirm that at this time.
We cannot confirm or deny that,
Oh, dear God. Well, from one thing to another, let's talk something slightly different then. So let's talk about AMD then, because we've had a lot recently about NVIDIA, haven't we? You know, all the updates, improvements, you know, particularly with Starfield coming out. But now, you know, AMD themselves have been talking up their, what's it? I can never get this right.
FSR3. So this is something they announced Fidelity last year, wasn't it?
Super Resolution, isn't it?
That's the one. Fidelity Super Resolution version 3. So this was announced last year with the release of their latest generation graphics card. And it's basically their answer to NVIDIA's DLSS frame generation. Which only works on the 4000 series, doesn't it?
Correct.
NVIDIA's one. So AMD are ready to release this month. It supports all the way back to the RX 5000 and above series, although AMD are recommending to run this on a 6000 or 7000 series GPU. But it also supports Intel Arc and NVIDIA RTX 2000 up, which is good to know, because NVIDIA will only support 4000 series up, won't they? On their frame generation.
This is quite a clever move by AMD, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The fact that they're not keeping this an exclusive to their top-end hardware, they basically said, yeah, it'll work on these guys. It'll work on our competitors. It'll work on the up-and-coming competitor, Intel. And I think there was another one I saw. Wasn't it some new consoles, potentially, as well?
Obviously, AMD provide the hardware for PlayStation 5 and Xbox, the CPU and the GPU. So I should presume they've aimed it to work on that as well.
Pretty impressive, really. But so what sort of frame rates we get here? Because I see they kind of gave Forspoken, which is a game I'd never heard of.
I've heard of it, I've never played it. But yeah, they were saying at 4K ultra high with ray tracing, but FSR off, it was getting 36 frames per second. But turn that on, you're jumping to 122, they're saying.
That's a hell of a jump, isn't it?
It is. Well, we were seeing similar ones when you use NVIDIA's frame generation techniques, isn't it?
Yeah, that's almost, four times faster, unbelievably. And that's ultra 4K, ultra high ray tracing, and then FSR3 only, nothing else to the same.
Exactly. Now, obviously, AMD is saying they can do this on pretty much anywhere because they're not using any kind of machine learning hardware to run it. So NVIDIA uses the... Is it Tensor Cores? Is that what it is? Is that what they call them?
But
AMD aren't using that. Instead, they're using motion vector data from games being played to help generate interpolated pixels. So, they're making educated guesses from the motion it's seeing on the screen to generate the next frame. Game-wise, though, Forsaken, obviously, that's the one that... Forspoken, not Forsaken. And EA's Immortals of Avium will add FSR3 support this month, September. And there are a total of 12 other games said to add the technology at some point in the future, but we don't have a list of games. So we're going to have to wait and see. But I imagine with the Xbox and PlayStation 5 supporting this, that we're going to see a lot more games have it built in as a default.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? When they announce these capabilities, it does take a while for the dev teams to catch up, doesn't it? Embed it into their games. And, you know, typically it's more of the newer titles being released rather than retroactively building in this capability. But that being said, they have mentioned before it is easier for developers to do that, isn't it? They'd like the DLSS thing. It wasn't as complex as previously. So, I'm interested to see this. Given that it will support our cards, that makes me a little bit of a happier chappy than worrying, this is another
Starfield will get it.
Well, that's a good point.
That you already uses FSR2. I wonder if it's a drop-in replacement with FSR3.
Yeah, and given that NVIDIA had to drop some additional driver sets, didn't they, for Starfield because of the issues with
yeah, no DLSS in Starfield, no. So, well, not yet anyway.
But it does. I have to say, since that latest driver update, it's much better. I have to say, it's much smoother.
It is, yeah, yeah. I think I've still got mine set to potentially ultra.
I can't remember what mine's set to, actually, now I've said that.
Whatever but... the ultra wide is, it's...
It's pretty smooth. I only see a little bit. Yeah. I only see a little bit of jitter during some of the FMV.
Yeah, I get. I might need to turn mine down, but I get the occasional jitter when I'm going into a big fight.
Maybe
I need to tone it down to high rather than ultra. But we'll see.
Yeah, maybe this will be the answer to it.
Maybe I don't need to do anything.
Well, talking of technology, then Intel have in the last couple of weeks shown off what can only be described as a monster processor, isn't it? Absolutely monster processor. This is a 528 thread with a terabyte of co-packaged optics memory. So this is...
It's not memory.
Sorry.
Photonic interconnect.
Sorry, that's it. Sorry, photonics, that's the word. Sorry, yes.
Yeah.
Which is a multi-chip package design that gives extra abilities for these chips. So this is a quite a specialized processor, isn't it?
It is.
Where data is transmitted optically as opposed to in the more traditional sense, isn't it, of transmit data over electronically.
Exactly. So this is only eight core, but each core
eight
has
core.
Each core has 66 threads available, 528 core. It is RISC and not x86. But this was born of or designed for DARPA's Hierarchical Identity Verify Exploit, or HIVE program, because it needs an acronym, doesn't it?
Of course, if it's DARPA, I mean...
Exactly. You know. So it's kind of an initiative. It seeks to develop a graph analytics process capable of churning through streaming data 100 times faster than conventional compute architectures, that they're saying, while also consuming less power. But yeah, so you've got to say it's RISC. It's not even ARM or x86. It's RISC. A lot of threads, but... The bit that struck me was that silicon photonics interconnects. Yeah. They sound quite interesting. So this isn't within the chip itself. This is still allowed to speak externally to other chips. So those, how I've got to understand it. So each of these chips has 32 of these interconnects, 16 for transmitting and 16 for receiving. And each is capable of 32 gigabytes a second, given that total of a terabyte a second of bandwidth. Though I'm going to caveat here, the team has only managed to achieve half that rate. And the fibers often misbehaved or broke during testing. It's a bit delicate at the moment, apparently. But it is designed to massively scale. So you can have 16 of these chips networked together in one package on the Open Compute Project server, which is like a sled form factor.
Yep.
And you can have multiple sleds, potentially as many as 100,000 of these sleds networked together. Whoa. So in a sled-to-sled configuration, basically giving you, I did the calculation, I didn't say it in the article, but it gives you 844,800,000 threads.
I'm just trying to work that out. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I have to run the numbers several times ago. That's a lot of threads. But because it's optical, though, it gets that high bandwidth and very low latency from one chip on one sled to a chip on another sled, just a very low latency on it.
But they didn't really kind of say explicitly what they were going to be using for these chips, was it? It was talking about data sets, so they were talking about graphics.
I presume analytics. Streaming data sets. This sounds like it's processing visual data.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd imagine. And all sorts of data from sensors coming into compute in real time.
I mean, and given that this is DARPA and potentially the US military, yeah. The capabilities of what this could be used for are probably slightly beyond you and I, what we should be using. Skynet. Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I mean, we're not far off Skynet, are we? Let's be honest.
They called it Hive. That sounds rather menacing.
I mean, yeah, anything that you give a call it in a Hive network is, a little bit worrying. I did see on Amazon. So they have, back in 2017, they had the DARPA Hive program, Understanding Relationships with Data. So back in 2017, they were looking at how to build a graphics analytics processor that can stream 1,000 times faster than current processing technology back in 2017. So the power to advance graphics analytics and solve challenges such as cybersecurity and infrastructure monitoring. What else did it say? Oh yeah, DARPA is hosting the Hive to develop a trillion edge data set with solutions that contribute to this. So this is obviously the output of their research. And quite frankly, terrifying. that amount of computing and bandwidth, you know, this optical transfer seeds, I mean, wow, if they can get that running, that's amazing. But yeah, what are they doing? I mean,
do we want to know? Ignorance is bliss, isn't it?
Ignorance is bliss. Yeah, this will be the next. This is, you know, I wouldn't say AI because obviously that's not what we talk about with this. But yeah, who knows? This could be churning through for some large language model, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it could be.
And taking out, doing the graphics or live data sets analysis, speeding up that very quickly, and then providing it to some generational or precision AI model that gives it, you know, oh God knows, I'm not even going to go down that road. Well, Intel haven't just been making super high-end chips, have they? They've also now confirmed the next iteration of Thunderbolt, haven't they? So snappily titled Thunderbolt 5.
Surprise!
Woohoo!
Yeah, exactly. So this is obviously, we've got to improve it. So it's twice as fast as Thunderbolt 4 in its standard configuration. So Thunderbolt 4 is capable of, what is it, 40 gig a second bidirectional. So in its standard configuration, TB5 will do 80 gig a second each way, but it can use something called bandwidth boost. So to reconfigure itself on the fly to support high bandwidth displays. So if you've got like 8K, 144, 200 hertz a second displays, it can switch from 80 gig bidirectional to 120 gig transmit and 40 gig receive, just to give that more bandwidth to put out that image to the display.
I mean, that's amazing if it works. And the reason I say if it works, because I mean, I don't think I've ever seen the theoretical bandwidth on a Thunderbolt 3 cable, let alone, you know, 4.
Well, I imagine these are, yeah, I imagine if you're talking multiple 4K or 8K displays as they start to become more available, then that is a lot of bandwidth to chug through.
And don't forget, this is not USB-C. That is just a connector.
No, that's just a connector. Just a connector. We've been through this with Apple.
Well, yeah, mate.
But the more interesting thing for me, though, is it has support for up to 240 watt power delivery.
Yeah, that's more impressive.
So what does Thunderbolt 3 only did, I don't know, but Thunderbolt 4, sorry, that did 140 watt maximum. So this will do 240. So those gaming laptops, you might actually be able to power for a USB-C connector now.
That would be pretty good. I mean, that would be... That would
not
be
so much
impressive.
A problem for Macs, because they don't eat that much power because they don't have those big GPUs in them. Not like the NVIDIA ones. But yeah, I certainly know my gaming laptop, which it's only got a 3050 Ti in it. But yeah, I can power it off USB-C, but I don't get anywhere near the performance because I'm hitting, 100 watts, I think, on that one. I have to get the old-fashioned barrel jack adapter out and use that for one, game at full performance on it.
Yeah, I mean, given Thunderbolt capabilities, I think, are massively underused, really, aren't they? I mean, I use USB-C Thunderbolt 3 cables to power my Mac, and it does, you know, power delivery. It supports dual K displays, we all know that. And you know, as I discovered when I was trying to do that transfer, do you remember, between my new Mac and I ended up using Thunderbolt 3 cable. Where it was PC to, what Intel call PC to PC networking is up to 32 gig.
Now
I don't think I was getting 32 gig, but I was getting definitely faster than a gig, put it that way, in terms of data transfer. But yeah, you're right, the ability to power transfer as well up to those kind of wattage, I mean, that would be really game changing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. It's just as I bought myself a Thunderbolt 4 dock.
Yeah, I really like Thunderbolt ports. You know, back in the day when it used to be a bit of a niche connector, wasn't it, Thunderbolt? Now with the, and you know, do you remember we had FireWire as well, didn't we, as a competing the competing thing. I think now we've got a bit of standardization across the board here. It is far more useful. I mean, and I'm going to make some investments this year in some decent Thunderbolt cables.
That's the problem. You've got to make sure you get the right cables, and it's very Thunderbolt 4 for those kind of bandwidths. It's very distant dependent, I imagine, or even number 5, Thunderbolt 5 as well. You know, do you need a passive Thunderbolt or an active Thunderbolt? And it just gets a bit confusing.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, we're not going to see up to 120 gig of data transfer anytime soon, and I don't see a specification personally where I need that.
No.
But having the ability to do higher power transfer, the ability to do data transfer if necessary, maybe, do you actually think about it, if I had a Thunderbolt 4 external drive that could support that, that would be good.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's kind of some of the reasons when I was buying a Thunderbolt 4 dock. Mine's different. I've got a Thunderbolt 4 KVM on the way to connect my my laptop and my desktop to a common set of peripherals. You know, I won't actually be using it for displays because I don't really have Thunderbolt displays, but I'll be using it for things like my Elgato face cam needs at least 5 gig a second because it's uncompressed. I've got drives plugged into it, all my normal peripherals. But lots of high bandwidth. There's a sound card plugged into it as well, so again, another high bandwidth thing. I'll be able to connect all that between multiple machines just using one cable to each machine and a switch in the middle will be great.
Yeah, this is the way forward, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Way forward.
I mean, Thunderbolt 5, you might be able to plug an external GPU in and get pretty much full bandwidth.
120, yeah, you probably could do, couldn't you, with 120 gig?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you could actually have, between your laptops, I mean, if you're on the Windows, it doesn't really work on Mac anymore, does it, external GPUs? But yeah, you could have a 4090 in an enclosure and switch that between a work laptop and a gaming PC or whatever, and yeah, great.
Yeah, that would be pretty impressive. I did see that Intel are saying that they expect them up to 2 meter cables will be eventually available. So that's
Exactly. It's the problem. It's trying to get other people, because Intel obviously were leading the charge, and so was Apple, but they called it something different, didn't they? What do we call it? Is it Fun? Oh, it wasn't originally called Thunderbolt, was it?
No.
That's what Apple called it, but originally it was designed by Intel. It was called something else, and I can't remember what it was called now.
But anyway, the specification.
Yeah, it wasn't originally called Thunderbolt. It was a different name for it.
I'm trying to think what it was.
Apple and Intel called it different things for the same technology, and I can't remember what it was now.
Oh, Wikipedia reckons it was called Lightpeak.
Oh, that was it. Yeah, Lightpeak. Yeah, that was Intel's name for it, and Apple called it Thunderbolt.
Yeah.
And that's the one that stuck. Yeah, it was the same technology back then. It was, and they both worked on it.
And that's it. FireWire superseded it, but FireWire was then superseded by Thunderbolt. So
that's it, exactly. But then, yeah, so AMD didn't really do it at all, though. I think AMD, with USB 4 and stuff like that, we're starting to see them use Thunderbolt more and more.
Yeah, and it has become very standardized now because, I think, purely because of the USB-C port connector on it.
Exactly.
That has really helped, because having that as a port has just, I think, got uptake across the board, really.
It has. But I don't know what extra licensing fees there are to use Thunderbolt as opposed to USB 4. Is it more expensive? You'll need better chips because there are kind of guaranteed minimums they have to align with, isn't there? So, you know, you have to have at least dual 6K monitor support, at least 140 watt power delivery, or else USB 4, it says up to 240 watt. You don't even have to do power delivery at all with USB 4 if you don't want to, whereas it's a requirement for Thunderbolt 5. So I imagine it is a more expensive hardware proposition for the manufacturers, but is it also licensing? I have no idea on licensing costs for the manufacturers on this.
No, I'm not sure either. I suspect there probably is.
Yeah, I imagine there's a licensing cost for both USB 4 and Thunderbolt, but is one more expensive than the other? I have no idea.
Hmm. No. It's a very good thing. Very good question, because you do have to wonder, don't you, as you say, whether or not there is a license in there.
And I suspect most things, this hampers adoption, isn't it? If it's more expensive for the manufacturer, it's more expensive for the consumer. And consumers, with the exception of, you know, people like me and you who like to spend a bit more money on premium kit, generally want to go for the cheapest thing. If that's making that more expensive, manufacturers won't implement that.
So I did see somewhere when I was doing some research that it's something like a few thousand dollars a year for you to use a trademark on it. So yeah, if you don't use USB logo and use the chip, then it's like 6,000 something or 5,000 a year payment to the USB IF. So, you know, let's say less than $10,000 a year probably to use the licensing. But, you know, that's still that's quite a lot of money, isn't it? Factoring it in. But no, it's a good question. I'm not too sure, but Given the uptake now, I would say that there's probably a better licensing deal happening than previously.
Fingers crossed, yeah.
You would hope, anyway.
Exactly.
So before we move into the craziest story of the week, let's talk about another slightly crazy story, but still within the realms of reality, which is called Ultra Ram.
I want some. You sold me on the name. I want some.
I love it. I love it. I love it. So, Carl, tell me, what is Ultra RAM?
All right. Well, it's a new type of universal memory that can exceed both the longevity of your SSD flash drive and match the read-write speeds of system memory. So Ultra RAM is by a UK company called Qantas Technology. It's a company spun out of Lancaster University here in the UK. And according to the manufacturer, now this is where it gets techie, stay with me, our patented memory technology uses quantum mechanical resonance tunneling, right, to provide unmatched combinations of speed, non-volatility, endurance, and energy efficiency. I'm not even going to the next bit because I don't understand it. It uses floating gates and barriers and all sorts of things to lock electrons in place. Sounds very techie, but ultimately, it's faster than your SSD. It retains the memory, so it's faster than your system RAM. It's got the longevity of your SSD, and it keeps what's in memory when you turn it off. Sold. When can I have that as a universal storage?
When it's actually the reality of being able to make it, is there? Because at the moment, this reads to me like this is some kind of...
Sounds like a research paper, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, a theoretical physics research paper, you know, like spaghetti theory or whatever they call it and things like that. But, I mean, this would be awesome. I mean, you could pretty much have something like a laptop and, I don't know, we could save some data on it, put it in a time capsule with the power adapter and bury it for 1,000 years. How's that good? Well, let's call it 900 years just to be safe.
Exactly. I mean, I don't think this is the first time we've been here. I'm sure I've heard about these types of memory before, but they've been a lot of traction. So this probably won't go anywhere. It'd be nice if it is. It'll probably be ridiculously expensive and that will kill it.
As everything.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm guessing,
you know, if you've got an application for this where there's a worry that if power goes off or there's, you know, you don't have, you know, a period where you might not have external power or things like that, it could be quite useful. Or trying to have some kind of, I guess, by maybe like the banking sector, where you need to ensure that, you know, there's a kind of governance or, you know, a ledger, not a blockchain ledger, but, you know, a record of transactions that need to be stored. And yeah, there are ways, I guess, you know, things are doing on it, but yeah, it isn't coming anytime soon, put it that way. But
no, it's not.
Definitely, if you want to have a read in the show notes, we have got the write up there. And yes, if you're into theoretical physics, you probably look at this and go, oh, I know exactly what all this means. The rest of us, it sounds a crazy long time RAM. Awesome work.
Yeah.
So then, before we get into the TechRAM rumor mill, we've got this random story that came out at the start of August that we've been sat on for a few weeks, but we think this is hilarious. So let me introduce you to the rapper Razzlecan, a.k.a. Heather Morgan. She and her husband... Ilya Lichtenstein were arrested last year in New York over a potential laundering of nearly $4.5 billion of Bitcoin that was stolen in 2016. Yes, stay with me. We are talking about a white rapper and her husband who apparently have been laundering Bitcoin. So apparently both of them have pleaded guilty to trying to money laundering charges.
Yep.
Apparently the rapper Razzlecan, or Heather Morgan, let's call her Morgan. Yep. She also pleaded to an additional count of conspiracy to defraud the United States, which probably never a good move.
No.
But really, randomly, part of the cover-up for this was her publishing these rap videos and songs filmed around New York under the name Razzlecan, which she called herself, and I quote, you're going to love this, a badass moneymaker and the crocodile of Wall Street.
Man, that's some self-confidence going on.
Yeah, so this links back to a hack that happened in 2016. Her husband, who is a programmer, they're attempting to cash out their stolen wares from the crypto firm Bitfinex. And interestingly, at the time they were arrested, I think it was in early 2022, there was close to 120,000 bitcoins that were in their wallet, which was the largest ever seizure, wasn't it, by the Department of Justice.
Yep.
Though when the bitcoins were stolen, they're only worth 71 million.
So can you really try someone and convict him for 4.5 billion's worth of money laundering when they actually did it, it was only worth 71 million?
I don't know.
Seems a bit disingenuous to me.
It does, doesn't it? So it seems that, you know, so she also was known as an economist, serial entrepreneur, SaaS investor and rapper who loves robots. Yep. And she regularly wrote on Forbes magazine. So there are articles you can find, Heather R. Morgan. And one of them was under Forbes Women, got burnout. This tech CEO thinks you should try rapping. I mean, she obviously had a real delusions of her grandeur. But the kind of the basically the in court, it was demonstrated how they tried to cash out the money, wasn't it? So they split it up into tiny amounts. They put it into hundreds of wallets for fake accounts. They mixed it with other cryptocurrencies on the dark net.
Yep.
They purchased gold. They built, created shell companies. But apparently, according to prosecutors, one of their biggest mistakes, though, was they went shopping in Walmart with vouchers paid with the stolen funds.
Just doing a normal day-to-day shopping.
So, you know, but, you know, they, and they, when they had, when they were raided, you know, they had the search warrant executed on the house. They had, they found hollowed out books with mobile phones. There were USB sticks, 40 grand in cash. And apparently the police even decrypted a spreadsheet, which covered the whole story of how they laundered the cash. Basically a spreadsheet of how they were operating.
No, they didn't just put an Excel spreadsheet with a Microsoft password protection on it, did they?
Who knows? But to top it off, the prosecutors also said that that if they had been successful, they were going to flee to Russia, which was where Liechtenstein was born.
Good old Russia.
Yeah. But so when the hack, apparently Bitfinex customers took what they call an enforced haircut, which I'm guessing is, you know, where they, you know, you basically take a loss, don't you, on your on your holdings.
Yeah, yeah.
And they lost 36% of their assets held by the exchange to cover the loss. But by apparently by 2019, some 3 years later, the company had reimbursed all of their victims. And they apparently the US have, well, they've recovered, haven't they, all of this money now.
So they have,
this is just unbelievable. This is one of those stories. This will be a Netflix documentary. I give it a year. This will be a Netflix documentary.
But those recovered funds should go back to Bitfinex, which means everyone that took a haircut
will get a windfall.
Get a nice big windfall now, apparently. Especially if it's worth $4 billion instead of $71 million. That'd be quite a cha-ching moment.
I mean, that's quite, yeah, quite a return on your investment. I have got seen some of her rap videos on YouTube.
Good. I know the answer is already going to be no.
I'm just going to leave it there. And her Wikipedia page is quite amusing as well, to say the least. Discography, High in the Cemetery, released in 2019. And Versace Bedouin, released in also 2019.
Wow, that's the titles of albums there.
But yes, Razzle Khan and her husband Ilya Liechtenstein, who have now pleaded guilty to the largest ever hack, well, one of the largest ever, excuse me, recovered hacks of cryptocurrency, some years ago now, back in 2016, have only just gone to court. But yeah, we were sat on this one for a couple of weeks, but we wanted to cover it. It just is hilarious. But
crazy world of tech. Good.
Crazy world of tech. Right, with that then, let me hang on. Where is it? Can't remember the old controls. So the Tech Wrap Rumor Mill is back, and we've only just dropped the Apple Watch Ultra Gen 2, but we already have one major rumor saying that the Apple Watch X, or is that, sorry, that's Apple Watch 10, isn't it? Sorry, the Apple Watch 10 is touting a major redesign as coming next year, according to early rumors. Then, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So yeah, launch for 2024-2025, I think. It's going to be 2024, surely, if the it's the Watch X, the Watch 10. It's the next one. It's the anniversary. You'd imagine it's going to be... I mean, Apple jumped the iPhone 9, didn't they, to get to 10 for the 10-year anniversary on that. So they're not going to delay it by a year. But apparently, you get a new magnetic attachment system for attaching and swapping bands rather than the, what we call them, rails, do we, on the current watch?
Yeah, I think they're rails, aren't they?
Well, so apparently it's going to be magnets now, which doesn't mean all your straps are going to be useless because you're going to have to buy new ones. Sorry, guys.
Hang on. This is Apple. This is no different to changing connectors on, you know, so don't complain.
Yeah, I know. So apparently people involved in developing the new Apple Watch say the system takes a considerable... the current system takes a considerable amount of space. It can be better filled with a bigger battery and other components. But yeah, I'm really not sure how much space those rails take up. I mean, it can't be that much, surely.
Well, I wouldn't have thought so. You know, they're not... I mean, you think...
Look, there's a little bit of space, now, isn't there? But
yeah, I mean...
How much more battery are you going to fit in?
Well, depends how big your battery is, I suppose. That's the question.
Well, yeah. I suppose it's in an awkward position. It's right in the middle, isn't it?
But German's not convinced, though, is he, that this is 100% coming to...
No. I mean, it's about time we had a newer design, surely, other than obviously the Ultra is a new ish design, but it would be good to see a new design for the actual standard watch. It's been the same for, well, all of them.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing would be new sensors as well, wouldn't it? That's the key thing.
It would be nice to have some of those, yeah.
But we will see. We will see. And we'll talk about it maybe next week. I think one of the rumors next week potentially is about redesign for the iPhone 16 as well. But we'll cover that next week. But yeah, magnetic band. I'm up for that. But yeah, again, I guess typical Apple, you know, removes everything that I've already got. What else we got then?
Well, Microsoft have patented a new 360-degree folding display. So could this be the Surface Duo 3? I don't know. But yeah, there have been several patent filings. The latest one revealed that companies have spent with this 360-degree folding screen. And I think it details how the hinge will work on it. You know, be able to fold it basically all the way back on itself, both ways. So you can fold, you know, you have to display both sides of your phone as well as having it in the middle when you close it up like a book.
I had to think about this, but then I realized what you meant. It's like those HP and those yoga laptops where you can fold them back on themselves.
Yes, exactly. Like my current work laptop. Yeah, I could fold all the way back on itself, but obviously you'd have a screen both sides, being it's taking your iPad and folding it back on itself, really. But yeah, this kind of follows another one from 2020, which shows how to build a reversible folding display without a gap. You know, basically completely fold it like a piece of paper. And apparently LG have already made a prototype of that display.
That's pretty cool. I mean, I can see some good applications for that, you know, but I'm not sure if you've got the screen folded back the other way, what you're going to see on it.
Yeah, I don't know. So it's basically, it sounds like the current Surface Duo 2, but with one display rather than two.
Yeah, that's probably a closer point, isn't it? Yeah. I don't know how well they've been selling, though, because with Panos Panay leaving Microsoft, you know, that's a bit of news there for you, if you hadn't seen that. There was talk that Microsoft were cutting back on the experimental Surface line.
Maybe. I mean, they had a new event the other day, but obviously
they
only just left a few days before, so that was well into it. And they did announce new Surface devices. The new, is it the Surface Studio Laptop 2? Looked very, very nice.
I'm sure I saw on Twitter from Mary Jo Foley, you know, the renowned Microsoft critic and follower.
Analyst, yeah.
Analyst, that's the word I'm thinking of, yes. And critic at times. I'm sure there was posting saying that they were kind of cut back on a lot of the experimental lines. Now, again, you know, like Apple, they put patents out all the time. Doesn't mean they're going to be turned into designs, and this could be part of a future different product. But yeah, it's interesting to see they're doing it. I mean, it's the same with Apple. We've seen Apple put out similar patents somewhere on folding devices, but we've not seen anything yet.
No folding iPhone or iPad, do we?
Personally, I still think we're some years away from really mainstream folding devices. Yeah. The tech is there, but it's not quite as good as it could be, is it? I think that's the problem.
No, I think it needs to be a bit tougher, a bit hardier for the average Joe.
Yeah, that's a good point, but interesting to see if it comes out. But yeah, I do not think it's a Duo 3, though. That's my view.
No, I'm not even sure if we're going to get a Surface Duo 3.
No, I don't think you will. No. Anyway, so I'm talking Microsoft.
Oops. So this next rumor comes direct from Microsoft themselves by their own evidence submitted to the FTC versus MS case. Well, it seems someone at Microsoft forgot to redact the documents they were uploading to the court system. And of course, it goes to the system. It becomes public. So first off, we've got information on a midlife refresh of the Xbox Series X, haven't we? And it seems
looking good.
They've chiseled off the corners. It's now become a trash can Mac. It's become that. So this is it seems to be a round cylindrical shape. They're calling it 4K Gen 9 console gaming. I don't know what would be Gen 9 already. I don't know. It's a midlife refresh. So it seems we've got all new Southbridge of a modernized IO. So we're basically getting USB-C. We're getting Wi-Fi 6E. 6E
not better sexy. Wi-Fi.
6E, no. Bluetooth 5.2. A 6-nanometer die shrink for improved efficiency. I don't think it's going to be a more powerful chip, just a more optimized one. Apparently, we might be getting more storage, up to 2 terabytes of internal storage. And an all-new, what is it? An all-new immersive controller, they're calling Sybil.
I really like this controller. It looks really nice.
It does. What we got? So you've got connectivity via Xbox Wireless 2, Bluetooth 5.2, Direct to Cloud, whatever that is. I've not heard of that controller spec. But I presume you can just connect it to maybe a Samsung TV with xCloud and just directly play it. I think that's probably what they mean. What else is coming? It's a new kind of design. It seems to have some of the hot swappable bits from the Elite controller. It seems like you might be able to swap out the thumbsticks on the fly.
They look like the Elite controller thumbsticks.
They do, don't they? A new precision haptic feedback engine. Haptics can also double as speakers. It's going to have an accelerometer in it and quieter buttons and thumbsticks. So generally a kind of evolution there. Lift the weight up as well. I presume that's due to the accelerometer.
And again, rechargeable and swappable batteries again, which is a good point.
Exactly. So, but then they
also... I like it.
Reduced size, reduced power supply in the console as well. More 100% recyclable packaging. Yeah. A nice mid-line. I suppose it's like the Xbox Slim, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. I was going to say Xbox Slim.
Oh, so no disc. No disc drive. So no, that was the other
that's
one.
That's the key thing. Yeah, no disc drives at all. So, completely cloud only, which, let's be honest, for most people is probably exactly what you want and need, isn't it? No different to the Xbox Series X.
I remember last time I brought a disc game, but...
Series S, the cut-down version.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'm lucky enough I have a fast internet, so I don't need discs, but that might affect other people who don't.
No, I think this is really good. I like it. So, I'm looking forward to seeing more about this when it comes out. I'm also going to be interested in the new controller because I haven't purchased an Elite controller yet. I may do that.
So good.
This time, treat myself. this is quite interesting. So, and we'll talk a little bit more. We'll talk a little bit more next week about some of the changes about Microsoft coming up. So, that's probably a good place for us to wrap up for today. Then, so next week we're going to tee you up on a couple of big stories that have broken this week. We want to spend some time on, which is around the CMA giving preliminary approval to the Microsoft Activision Blizzard deal, and what that really is going to mean for consumers. Cisco have splunked some cash. Boom! See what I did there? have announced their intent to acquire Splunk for $28 billion. And again, we'll talk about that once the dust has settled and more news has come out. One thing we're going to talk about, which only has just happened in the last 24 hours, is we have reenacted the plot of the Andromeda the Andromeda syndrome. Andromeda Effect, isn't it? Andromeda Effect, I think, yep. Is it? The film. So the Andromeda Strain, what am I on about? Which is, if you're unsure what the hell I am on about, which is a 1969 novel, but also was a film made in 1971 about scientists who recover a capsule that has got, alien dust and organism coming from space. Very similar to the recent collection of dust that NASA dropped from a satellite, didn't they, from the OSIRIS-REx mission that was launched in 2016 to recover material. So yes, straight out the plot of the Andromeda Strain, we're going to talk to you and tell you about this groundbreaking mission to return dust from an asteroid back to Earth that happened yesterday. So
one other thing for the rumor mill. So we will finish off the rest of the Microsoft leak where we talk about what the next Xbox is going to look like.
Oh yes as well, the next Xbox. Yes, not the new redesign, the midlife redesign.
2028 new Xbox.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's a good one to keep there because we can
keep that for
next week. We will indeed. Right then, with that, of course, you can keep finding us on X/Twitter, whatever you want to call it this week or whatever it is called. We are at Weekly Tech Rant. And also all of our show notes at techrant.online. I thank you, Carl. To Carl, I have joined Blue Sky this week, and I need to get that set up properly. So we'll see how that affects us and whether or not there's maybe we can get ourselves on Blue Sky. Who knows?
Maybe.
But yes, all of our show notes at techrant.online. Of course, wherever you get and listen to your podcast, please share, tell your friends about us. For some reason, these reviews help with the algorithms. And we'll be back next week for episode 146 of the Weekly Tech Rant. Hopefully this cold may have passed. I've been Jay.
I've been Carl. Have a good
one, everybody.